Welcome to the Millennial Soul Food Podcast, episode 18, with my New Orleans Coven comrade, Tyler Firth. I'm your host, Keontae. Enjoy. What's up? It's your girl, Keontae. This is show number 18. Oh my God. I'm your host, spiritual life and business coach, tarot reader, cultural sociologist, and hoodoo mystic, Keontae, aka Yamaway, aka Keon. And today, I'm so excited for this episode. We have on one of my long-term time friends, Tyler Firth of Crossroads and Coincidences. And this is my coven comrade, my New Orleans coven comrade. We get together on the new moons and full moons and all the moons in between to talk about just, period, all the spell work, ritual, occultism, all that kind of stuff. So this is my person. This is who I go to just to have the deep conversations. One of many people, but this is my go-to person, has been for over a decade now. So I just hope y'all really enjoy this interview. We dive into both of our histories as Native Mississippians with roots, familial roots in New Orleans, Louisiana. So I just also want to make a couple of announcements. So if you want to contribute to the show, if you want to donate to keep it going, you know, this is a lot of hard work on my part. My PayPal is keondillon@gmail.com. That's keondillon @gmail.com. The Venmo is @keon-dillon. And my Cash App is $ELDRA, Eldra. And so if you're interested in donating, please send a donation. Anything helps, period. Read. Give us a review on iTunes. Leave a review. Leave us some five stars, and I will read out the review on the show. So that is it, I think. Yeah, follow me on Instagram. Y'all know, @MillennialSoulFood. Hit me up. Yes, enjoy the show. Thank you. So today we have Tyler Firth of Crossroads and Coincidences, and he is a tarot reader and I would say just someone who practiced cardomancy. Yeah. And you specifically focus on the Lenormand deck. And I actually know Tyler from college, so we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But do you want to tell them a little bit about yourself? I know you recently moved to the French Quarter. You moved back down south from...
Yeah.
Baltimore.
Yeah.
So tell us about that.
So the coming home journey has been pretty interesting, especially during COVID, but it's been a really great opportunity to get back home but connect with like the genius Loki of the place, like the spirit of the place, rather mm-hmm. than occupy all my time meeting new people.
Mm-hmm. So tell us, for people who don't know, what exactly is Loki?
Oh, like a genius Loki is a non-human spirit of the place.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, when you think of London or Moscow in your mm-hmm. head, you can already perceive a flavor of energy with a personality, mm-hmm. not necessarily connected to anyone you know.
Yeah.
And that is the spirit that you meet in a place if you try to encounter it and not just its people.
Mm-hmm. And it's definitely a lot of spirit here. I'm talking hella loud. I like to try to project. We were talking earlier about New Orleans kind of having a spirit of Dionysus. So would you say that is kind of a characteristic, like a low-key characteristic of New Orleans, or what would you say?
Yeah, I'd say that there's especially, and I'm going to talk about the French Quarter because my family's from that area and that's where I'm living, so I know it best.
Mm-hmm.
And the French Quarter has like a kind of trinity of personalities that is happening. You have a history of really horrendous events that have resulted mm-hmm. in like a panoply of hauntings of all mm-hmm. different sorts. So that definitely accrues in a space, right? And then beyond that, you've got the fact that the French Quarter especially is rubbing up against a corner of the Mississippi River. Mm-hmm. And the Mississippi River doesn't take away soil, it leaves it behind. So when the Mississippi River moves, it is adding to itself even physically, which is why the French Quarter doesn't flood as opposed to a lot of other
Is that
places.
Why it's just the sediment, right?
Or yeah, something? Yeah. So it just deposits over the years. Well, anyway, similar to how that sediment deposits, I at least perceive that energy is depositing.
Like, I definitely see that.
Like when people talk about ley lines,
yeah,
like it's a very tangible ley line. Okay, mm-hmm. So that's kind of like a battery for the area, mm-hmm. beyond just having its own river spirits, especially mm-hmm. like diaspora associated identifications of that river spirit.
Mm.
And so it's providing energy to the city while all of these sort of hauntings are going on and people are partying all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about Dionysus. He comes in the sense that he is the god of murder and mm-hmm. drunkenness and gaiety. Mm. And so he is the deity that straddles those two things and provides you euphoria and tragedy at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that creates a patina all over that area. And then you have the parades coming in seasonally, like the Nile flooding, mm-hmm. for that same energy.
Mm.
And so the French Quarter has a lot of nuance to explore because mm-hmm. you're actually getting information in different facets.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot to unpack there. I definitely want to talk more about the river and water spirits, because there are there's the spirits who influence, I guess, New Orleans, the black people who died in the transatlantic trade of enslaved black people. I hate saying the slave trade and the word slave period, but people who died in that. And then also you have the fact that it's the river starts as a drop. A trickle in I think Minnesota, mm-hmm. and then it moves through the entire country and brings all this sediment down here, and then that contributes to the life that lives in the water and crawfish and all that kind of stuff. So it's just, and then gumbo is a huge a compilation of just a bunch of different shit. Mm-hmm. So I definitely see that. So it's kind of sounds like there's a lot of layers of energy here. And then on top of the fact that there's kind of like a, it's not like ruined chic, but there's an effort to keep buildings, especially in physical spaces, as they were.
Yeah,
in history.
I think it's a business decision because they want people to come to something that they can see what they expected, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think it's a way of concretizing a certain hegemony,
mm-hmm.
in preventing other social processes from happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm skeptical of, and I think a lot of people who live there are, of the Bucare Commission. That is a very militant idea of what you can and cannot do.
Mm. Very Napoleon.
Yeah, yeah. Or it is put in place to conserve a certain privilege conferred mm-hmm. on the wealthy.
Hmm.
Because
imperialist.
Yeah, and what's really interesting about it is I think it's one of the most beautiful places in America,
period.
If not on Earth, yeah?
Yes.
But the majority of people who hold assets there don't live there.
Hmm.
So it's something that people seem to cherish, but it's actually residentially vacant except for these seasonal things. Mm-hmm. There are some exceptions, me being one, but you definitely perceive that. For example, in my courtyard, I am the only person who lives there full time.
Hmm. What?
And
wow.
And it's not even Airbnb'd, so mm-hmm. that you get the energy kind of penetrating your gates.
Mm-hmm.
No one's allowed.
Wow.
And so it's they love it so much, but not enough to be there or let anyone else have it.
Hmm. So it's kind of you said, there is a monopoly and hegemony on the space, and also there's a lot of processes to keep a certain culture in place that mm-hmm. a lot of people aren't aware of, because it's built into the laws and ordinances and all that kind of stuff. And in a lot of ways, it keeps, like, black New Orleanians out. I have a lot of family here. A lot of black people from New Orleans who have lived here their whole life have never even gone to the French mm-hmm. Quarter and never seen it. So
there's an idea that there's an idea that almost like it won't let you in, like you're not supposed to be there.
Mm-hmm. In the quarters. Mm-hmm. I'm not from New Orleans. I don't claim to be. I'm from Mississippi. I have family that's from here, so you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm a similar story. After some economic changes that happened kind of in the tri-state area, a lot of the shrimping moved to Mississippi. Mm-hmm. My family moved just for purely economic reasons, but the older mm-hmm. people stayed. So I was there like every weekend. My mama, my great grandmother, lived on Annunciation Street and then Mallon Street. And mm-hmm. so I went to those two places virtually every weekend.
Mm-hmm. So tell us, where did Crossroads and Conjure, or Crossroads and Coincidences, sorry. I keep seeing you as like
it's
I don't know. We're going to talk about.
Yeah, it's also alliteration.
Yeah, and it is. We're going to talk about Conjure later on and like race and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But where did Crossroads and Coincidences come from?
I think there are two things that really drive the function of magic. Because mm-hmm. beyond just reading, I'm an active, I guess most succinctly, occult practitioner. Mm-hmm. And I really do believe a collision of like place and circumstance mm-hmm. really plays into how magic is formulated. Mm-hmm. And I also think that that's kind of what our life is full of.
Mm-hmm.
That and when you want your cards read, you're usually at a crossroads awaiting mm-hmm. a coincidence.
Mm-hmm. And they usually happen in the reading. Mm-hmm. Popping off. Hold on for 2 seconds. I just want to. So then you just started. You just started your Instagram and stuff.
Yeah.
What is your Instagram? Tell us your like handles and stuff like that.
So I am at Crossroads and Coincidences on Instagram, and the website is the same name, just .com. So scheduling is available on my website, and you can learn a little bit more about me. But Instagram is where I'm really putting a lot of energy, which is also been a developmental process for me in a unexpected way.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, also, I know that we both kind of identify with, like, Hermes and stuff like that. I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about that because I feel like that has something to do with Crossroads and Coincidences, especially just, like, with the practices. Like, New Orleans has a lot of, like, trickster energy.
Mm-hmm.
Hermes and is associated a lot of times with, like, Papa Legba and
Saint Espedy, which yeah. Because he delivers, the Cajun mythology about him is that he is a swift deliverer of whatever mm-hmm. you petition for, but since he was martyred by being decapitated, they view him as sort of just simply dumb. Mm-hmm. Like, so he delivers through the most blunt path of least resistance way.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to be specific with him, but it's not that he's trying to trick you, it's part of his nature. So he's mm-hmm. like a different face of Hermes for me in New Orleans.
I have definitely, whenever I first moved here, I used Saint Expedit mm-hmm. A lot in order to get like a job and like money to get two jobs actually. But yeah, I remember you were talking about leaving the offerings out. So okay, so I feel like we kind of need to give a little bit of history. So
yeah, okay.
I know Tyler from college, and Tyler was kind of one of the first people that I knew who like had practiced like occult ritual and all that kind of stuff. And we talk about this a lot as far as like race and stuff like that. But he like practices like hoodoo from like a Cajun lens.
Yeah.
And so like Tyler basically is the reason one of my first introductions to hoodoo, because I think in the black community there is a lot of trauma around that, and then you know, for hundreds of years not being allowed to practice hoodoo and I guess these more indigenous forms of spirituality, the relationship between like Black people and Cajun people and like hoodoo is kind of, it's like very complicated.
Yeah.
But I do think you do a good job of kind of like not marketeering the tradition and the way that, so I kind of want to talk about that a little bit, because I do feel like the French Quarter, there is, it's monopolized by a lot of white marketeers who are like, look at this voodoo doll, put some pins in it.
Yeah, and like look, I'm not going to name names of what stores people should stay away from, because
yeah, we don't have to name them.
Whether or not they're appropriating, I don't want to have to do the work to fend them off, to be honest. So, but if you go to a store that's selling like High John the Conqueror root and Cascadilla and like Grigri bags, and they're not employing a single person of color, then that lets you know that you should be suspicious. And that's not to say that their work is not effective, because sometimes people are focused on what's effective and they don't really think about the larger issues. They very well may be effective. That's kind of might be part of the problem. So I'm very cautious about who I purchase supplies from. So I think that's like from like a very material perspective, I think that's a way to start.
Yeah.
And I also have a belief, which is maybe a little separate but very connected, that the indigenous practices, which are based on like the mise en place of the people, like where they lived and worked and ate and what they could grow, and you know, it's being turned into something that becomes a more like set of technology. That's how people are viewing it, and I think we need to think not just within hoodoo or conjure, but in all of these traditions that people are finding information out about on the internet. I think we need to decide like what is information in terms of technology versus what is an initiatory path. And we need to hear from each other, because we have the internet, about what things are okay to use.
Yeah.
You know, because that is why a lot of Cajun folk Catholicism looks like hoodoo, because the same things grow. We go to the same stores. Whether or not the social relationship was harmonious, that happened. And it changed
the space.
And it changed both cultures, right? And so we can't go back to like the very root and say what's okay for the root now, because we are the ones who have to live this reality. But I think the decolonizing has to also happen on like my side.
I know Juju, she's my sis on Instagram, was saying white people needed to give Black people High John the Conqueror. Like, I honestly feel like you were saying, employ people of color, employ Black people. Like, how many of those stores are like donating to some of the most impoverished parts of New Orleans that have also provided all the culture, you know what I mean? Because then people don't know how to make gumbo. So it's like, and that's not a part of knowing someone's magic. But no. I mean, for me, you know, I cook a lot, and I'm a kitchen witch, and like cooking is a magical thing, and like knowing how to season food and put a certain kind of shape into it is it's important. But I think there are a lot of those a lot of those shops, like, they make so much money. But, I mean, for over 100 years, stuff has been marketeered, and nothing has really changed with New Orleans. It's just kind of just gotten worse a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's part of, like, an overall, like, global process.
Which is, yeah, that's
like
different.
Like Kali Yuga, basically.
But, yeah, I do think what you were saying is complicated, because, like, the metaphysical aspects of, like, occult... occultism, their kind of baseline as far as like, you know, use a candle and pray to this saint,
or like, that's like putting in jars, you can see in so many cultures. And so, like, is honey potting appropriation? You know, like I'm trying to go through the process of like personally looking within and trying to find opinions outside of me to resolve those questions.
Yeah.
Because I think it's also important for, like, the quality of the magic.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I feel like a lot of times, too, it does have to do with, like, the spirits that you're praying to and stuff like that. And then, because I know you don't practice any, like, ATRs or anything like that, but that is a huge thing here. I noticed, like, I guess kind of part of the reason I wasn't so into the ATRs here was because there were kind of too many white people. And it was like, it wasn't like I was like, oh my God, I don't want you here. But it was just like, culturally, I didn't feel comfortable praying to like ancestors who had gone through a lot of shit, you know? And I'm sitting here like, it's like a lot, it's a vulnerability that I just wasn't comfortable with, sort of.
Yeah, I will never touch a Loa. Like, I will.
Hey!
But I think people make the mistake of thinking because the tradition might not be right for you, that doesn't mean that you don't experience it.
Because exactly.
If you believe in other people's work and their spiritual process, it exists as part of your reality.
Spirit, yeah.
So it's there for us to perceive, but and to honor in the way. Like, sometimes backing up is giving reverence.
Yeah, right? And I feel like it's like, these days, like, yeah, the technology is in place, but there's kind of, like, a cultural aspect to it that we, like, there's undercurrents of that, and it's, like, important to be aware of that and stuff. Just, like, I guess it's the same way with, like, me appropriating a certain culture, or, like, yeah. So, I think that is an important conversation to have with people. But yeah, so it is. I think it definitely is very important to be just aware of where things come from, like cultures that they come from and stuff. But yeah, it's kind of really difficult to separate different elements of hoodoo.
Yeah, and what makes it tricky is, I, like many Cajuns, I was raised into the Roman Catholic Church. And, you know, went to Catholic school, had a consistent Catholic family, and I was actually really into the concept of religion, like Orthodox religion even, when I was a kid, before I knew what the other things I was doing were called. And a lot of the things I was taught to believe and practice, like the praying of the rosary, were the novenas to saints, which, like, again, there's like an overlapping place with hoodoo. So instead of being like, okay, here is a saint that is foreign to me, or some spiritual person from the Bible, it's like, oh wait, I grew up with that too. Isn't it cool that we're different, but we still have this, and it's also kept away from everybody else in a sense, because Catholicism is so close to the reality that most people practice saint veneration and that sort of thing who are deep into Catholicism. Like, think about Latin America just alone.
Yeah.
Right? And so they, it's excluded in a sense that makes it taboo, but it's also kind of the majority.
That, and I think that's important to bring up too, because like, I lived in, whenever I lived in Latin America, like, there's a lot, there's all race, all kinds of like colors there and stuff like that, but the Catholicism does kind of create, I guess, the Catholicism and the saint veneration, it creates these common elements between like white people there and black people. I would say black people there are more connected to the indigenous spiritual, like black spirituality, like African spirituality. But yeah, I would say it's interesting because hoodoo has a lot of commonalities with like brujeria in Mexico, and those, even those elements are complicated.
Yeah, I think like Latin American magic under a lot of different names is they did not use the same technology. They use more technology than Cajun people, but the logic was the same. Like, the sympathetic witchcraft of like when you put things in a vessel and light a candle on top, like that's same, you know. So you can touch that vein as a Cajun raised in that kind of tradition a little bit, not claiming that I understand it experientially. Mm-hmm. It's another reference. It's another like correspondence to put away in the inventory of your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like just because you are not meant to practice something doesn't mean you shouldn't know it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. True. So, what are some of your go-to like rituals, and what are some of the most common things you do?
Okay. So I think the foundation of any good practice is like finding a way to regularly invoke energy,
mm-hmm.
As pure energy as you can get, and then banish it in the evening to mm-hmm. clear your space and prepare your vessel for sleep and the experience of dream and mm-hmm. all of that. So I think there's a basic necessity that we have in magical hygiene, and everything gets constructed around that. Mm-hmm. So I start off with like a spiritually focused bath, not necessarily with herbs, mm-hmm. but just like with the act of faith that me just taking a shower and honoring the reality of the soap as a mm-hmm. symbol, I can do it. Like
mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think big and potential of how far you can stretch yeah. when your magic is available to you.
Right? It's all imagination.
Yeah, and so after that, I like. We'll do a lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram, which is a hermetic mm-hmm. dawn kind of staple. And then I light saint candles. And then I clean my house.
Which saint candles?
Mostly, it's sort of related to the larger workings going on in my life. So this will probably change over time. But Saint Joseph, Virgin of Guadalupe, there are certain plant spirits like rue candles mm-hmm. that I keep. Mm-hmm. And like, say, for instance, if there's something I really absolutely could not find mm-hmm. or I feel like someone has taken something from me, I'm going to do a novena to Saint Anthony.
Okay. Yeah. That's what's up. So invoking, so basically, this is, you said about like moving energy, invoking, evoking.
Yeah, so to banishing. Create like a movement of the sun within your mm-hmm. energy system, that like you give mm-hmm. it a schedule and consistency, and that you keep energy running and focusing mm-hmm. on the best energy you can get.
Mm-hmm.
And that involves what sort of spiritual court you work mm-hmm. with. That has a big impact. Like mm-hmm. I respect Santa Muerte. Mm-hmm. I do not actively work with Santa Muerte.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got mad respect for people who do venerate her,
mm-hmm.
but that is a decision that should be taken up with a lot of mindfulness mm-hmm. and discernment that I think people are sometimes reluctant to do or realize that like mm-hmm. entering, part of having a good relationship is starting it off on the right foot. And like, is she coming to you in dreams?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what? Are you ready to have the reality of death with you always?
Mm-hmm.
You can grow tremendously from it, but it is a mind-altering experience. So you need mm-hmm. to give yourself the opportunity for real informed consent.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. That's very interesting. Did you know I had a stint of working with Santa Muerte?
No.
Yeah, I actually stopped after a bit because I was like, Because I started to feel, I was like, is this like appropriation sort of?
My experience was that she started coming to me every night.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be in only one of her three like main robes.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw all three.
Hmm.
And I would constantly be in a dream and open a door, and then I was in a botanica that was nothing but Santa Muerte things.
What?
And the whole dream was a desperate sense of trying to navigate my way to find a candle and fix it to light it for her.
Huh.
And so I was like, okay, well, so she's knocking at the door. So
mm-hmm.
I went through that process for a while, and it wasn't that it was like she wasn't working for me or that like we had a bad relationship. It simply was the dream became like, business is done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on my way.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she definitely worked for me too. She was amazing. Wow. But yeah, I kind of stopped after a bit and then started doing my own other stuff. I wanted to get back to kind of water spirits a little bit and talk a little bit about hurricane turning.
Oh.
Like, it's not fun, but a thing, yeah.
Well, it's like, it is definitely my trauma.
Yeah.
So, for context, like, New Orleans was badly hit, especially via flooding, but I was in Biloxi at the time, and Biloxi...
Which is like an hour from here.
Yeah. And so, if you look at the map of Mississippi, it's at the very center of the very bottom. So the Gulf of Mexico was at the end of my subdivision. But I was in Hurricane Katrina. I was not with any family. I was in my home. The only person I was with was my second cousin, who was in his 60s, who was hard of hearing, and who was very, very drunk. And so I was on my own for the emotional experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got 6.5 feet of water in my house when I was 5'8". And it wasn't just regular water.
Oh my
it
God.
Was swamp water. When the water receded out, finally, there were people's teeth in my house.
Oh my God.
Like, 9 people died in my subdivision. So hurricane turning became a very real experience for me. Trying to find a consistent regimen that can keep an area safe. And I think that's going to become more important. So it's better to look now at what, like, if our earth is on the journey it is seeming to go, strategically, we should be trying this thing. Just from a purely, like, if I can say scientific on a spiritual podcast, a scientific way, like, find out what
this
works.
Is spirit science.
Yeah,
so period.
Yeah. And theoretically, weather magic is easy, because what you're looking for whenever you craft any magical act, before you do anything else, figure out what the means of manifestation are going to be. The whole thing, like, if you do prosperity spells and you never, like, work or never buy a lottery ticket, you don't have the opportunity that you would have for income. And so look at your life and see what are the channels things are most likely to be, like, outcoming as. Weather magic has all sorts of variables, because temperature is fluctuating and there's humidity and there's jet stream patterns, and it's a mess of variables. And so it should be easy, with, like, a kind of chaos theory mentality, to orchestrate that.
Yeah, because it's not like there's one determining factor.
It's a lot of rolls of the dice at once, and you only have to win a few times.
So then, what are some ways that people do hurricane turning?
So I know that some houses, voodoo houses, do hurricane turning. I've heard that through word of mouth and through people who have participated. I have not myself participated in
that.
They
do what kind of turning?
Like hurricane turning, like voodoo-oriented ceremonies. But I've only heard of that, so I don't know technique. I'm trying to be...
We can't say no names.
We ain't
saying no names, period.
But in any case,
that's for the Patreon, y'all.
Well, Patreon better tip me so I can get some evil eyes in my house. but no,
hey.
Beyond that, there are some planetary things. Like, there is a seal in the Greater Key of the Greater Key of Solomon that I have put on Instagram. But I think people sigilizing, like, forming glyphs with intent. Would also work just as well, especially if we did a bunch of them. And in my experiments, I've learned this through another podcast, but there's something called sigil shoaling, where you get a bunch of intents of things. Like, if instead of just saying, like, you know, he will love me, how are the 100 different ways that life can change so that he might love you? Not saying that's the best thing to do, but
yeah, people need to chill on the love shit.
But yeah, just to look at all of that and do a bunch of separate intents that you activate together, and then you give one that, like, you know is going to happen, like the sun will rise tomorrow, or, you know, I'll drink water, and so it definitely comes true. There's an idea that if you accompany one piece of magic with another that's more likely to come true, they're both more likely. They swim mm-hmm. like fish in a school mm-hmm. toward your reality.
Is that kind of hermetic?
No, that's from chaos magic.
Chaos.
Yeah.
Because so that Voodoo Gnostic workbook, that it they talk about that kind of stuff.
That book definitely has like a chaos streak.
Yeah, it does.
Because they're talking about gnosis from a chaos magic, like, state of mind that yeah. you need to be in order for magic to be successful versus, like, a like teachings of Jesus Gnosticism.
Mm-hmm. Damn. So then, that's really interesting that, like, it's kind of like you're manifesting, but through the energy of knowing that something else is for certain. It's like, mm-hmm. hell, like, mentalism. Kind of complicated. But if y'all want to follow it, you know, don't be out here summoning any kinds of yeah. angels and shit. Oh, speaking of, can let's get on like some conjure shit. So okay. like, let's talk about spirits, like, mm-hmm. Because I know that you have had a past of working with like spirits of different levels and stuff. Me personally, I just work with my like guides, but. I know that you have, especially when I met you in college, you're kind of,
he's trying to come up with a coy way of saying, yes, I have summoned a demon before.
I was going to say I'll use like the demon emoji, like the purple one, like, oh, I just thought about the dorm. We're in the dorms together. You're, like, my neighbor.
Yeah.
We, like, became friends the first day.
I think you may have been the first person I met.
Oh, my God. That was so funny. And then, yeah.
That I was actually thinking about that today. That we
wow.
There's this movement toward, like, everyone talking about a chosen family. I think mm-hmm. the idea is really wonderful. But I think most people view it as the family that you choose.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is a second kind of chosen family, one that was chosen for you by the forces.
Mm-hmm. I totally see that. And you just meet in mm-hmm. like coincidental ways
mm-hmm.
at crossroads. Hey! Yeah, yeah. mm-hmm. That's a plug, y'all. Follow a crossroads and coincidences. Marketeer too, y'all know. Uh-huh. I'm a marketing girl. Hit me up for those consulting services. But anyway, so yes, what were we talking about?
We were talking about when I summoned
the summoning the demons, because you know I don't do that. I stay washed in the blood of Jesus. So mm-hmm. you know, the most I'm gonna do is pray to some saints. And my gods right now.
Unless you're like a Thelemite who's summoning demons from the Lesser Key, which is an important pastime for a lot of them. You know, most people need to be washed in the blood of Jesus in order to even try to summon one. And that's what...
You don't be out here willy-nilly doing it.
And I did it in 10th grade, but I still took a long time making the decision. Thank you very much. But mm-hmm. it was for something very, very stupid. It was just to get my astronomy textbook back.
Mm-hmm.
It's after sunset, so I'm not about to say the demon's name. Just, you know, yeah. that's a good hygiene thing. But yeah, that's all it was for. And I didn't have any terrible experience in the outcome. It was mm-hmm. the actual invoking to physical manifestation part that was not an experience I wanted to repeat. Just energetically, it was not enjoyable to me.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So do you feel like people can conjure spirits unintentionally?
Yes. I think the biggest like crossing force in people's psychic reality is that version of themselves.
So the like lower vibration, like lower vibratory version of themselves, like existing in the spirit realm,
that,
or
like,
what?
That they're just all existing in that space for too much time, mm-hmm. so that like the spirit surrounding them, the result of their astral footprint,
mm-hmm.
It will live with them, and that if you allow those things, those lower vibrational states, to not happen and then productively disappear, then you create a reality for you that actually you are crossing yourself.
Hmm. That makes total sense. In the holographic matrix reality. Mm-hmm. So then do you feel like people kind of... Because a lot of people do think, like, other people sometimes are trying to, like, hex them and cross them and stuff. But a lot of times it is kind of your own mindset that can fortify against things, huh?
Because if you think... You're creating a thought form every time you meet someone. Because you don't have... You don't touch their full reality. Mm-hmm. You create an image of them that operates mechanically in the world and thus exists as a force, an intellectual mm-hmm. force existing in the astral plane. And so mm-hmm. the way you think about other people, whether it is true or not, creates a spiritual reality for you mm-hmm. that is liable to cross you.
That's why you don't need to have no expectations about people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that is interesting. That's hella philosophical because it is... It's not like, even if you're having sex with somebody, you're still, like, a separate consciousness. It's not mm-hmm. like you can ever, like, merge consciousness and experience the same way. I mean, that's arguable, too. But in the normal space, you don't really touch people in that way. So, yeah, it is kind of like you're creating a thought form. And, yeah.
You work with it in marital therapy because... Most people, their relationship problem, even if it's a sex problem, mm-hmm. is about communication. Mm-hmm. And so the process is just as much getting the projected versions to get along, like to mm-hmm. understand each other and resolve the differences, which are really nothing that their projection reality has turned mm-hmm. into something.
And that's why parental relationships are so difficult too, huh?
Because that's the...
That's some deep shit.
That is the voice that... Lets the world operate under the idea that the only way people get better is if you beat the bad out of them.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, how we create the projection for the child, they're going to take whatever you do and magnify it. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes worse than what you were.
Mm-hmm.
And all the more reason to think about what your strategy is going to be, because they will live with that, and then it won't even have your voice anymore. It'll have theirs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the force that tells them, like, you look like shit. You're not going to be able to do it, and just tries to find every flaw and never let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to create a little bit of that, but, like, how give someone an amount they can resolve.
Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of... My listeners out there, the millennials, we have a lot of parental trauma, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I've actually been getting a lot of people in the descriptions describe, like, they're like, I am going through a lot of purging, intergenerational trauma, and healing. So I think that's an undercurrent. I mean, even with the whole, the recent... movement, like, I don't know really what to call it now, because everything, I don't know, it's the summer 2020 has been lit, but I do think it's just created a kind of a current, you know.
Mm-hmm. I think the some of people's conceptions of ancestors can be wrapped up in these projections. I'm not just talking about knowing an individual and thinking untrue things about them, mm-hmm. but the collective of what kind of psychology ancestors have. You know, like the ancestors be like memes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's also why I'm a proponent of, I'm a starseed ancestor mm-hmm. girl. And I feel like the fact that I revere, like, let's say, I call myself a Pleiadian because, like, I've had constant contact, you know, I don't know, I have had a lot of coincidences to say them my cousins or something like that. But I think it helps me view, like, living on Earth in a way that is good for, like, sustainability and living on Earth, because I see the planet as, like, a spaceship, and thinking, like, systematically we should be using resources in a way that doesn't create these parasitic, like, you know, systems where there's, like, population, overpopulation, but actually it's, like, where the way that we're doing agriculture is, like, wrong. So I feel like that's shit that, like, starseed ancestors knew, you know, like, fucking aliens, like, know this shit. Like, this is, like, me saying it, like, you know how I'm saying it. But I feel like that is, that's a, like, characteristic, I think, if extraterrestrials or, like, you know, the people from a Sirius star are, like, Pleiadians, Lemurians, people in Atlantis, like, I think they understood that, like, technology and technological advancement is also wrapped up in your relationship with the environment, and it's not necessarily, like, conquering it and just wasting up shit and being, and just being greedy. It's more like working in tandem, because we could literally have, like, we could be creating water and food that helps people live for, like, 100 more years, you know, whereas it's going to money and, like, a lot of like lower vibration, like, material world. I'm thinking of the Tree of Life and, like, the bottom part, but, like, it's going, a lot of the energy is going to that, like, you know.
We have to find a way to be in harmony with Earth for as long as we possibly can. But I'm talking many, many, many years from now. It is inevitable that we will have to find a way to have a spiritual reality we can interact with in space. Because the goal of, like, science and physics long term is going to have to be escaping the universe. We know what's going to happen to it. We should not be here. It's not great, you know? And so we need the highest level of advancement as we can get, but we also need to perfect the process of symbiosis.
Do you mean going to, like, another galaxy or a...
Or even nearby planets. Like, it's a long story how I got there. But
to
I was
Mars.
No, I was having dinner one time with one of the astronauts who was working as a consultant for one of the companies that is seeking to go to another planet. And I asked them if their hiring practices were that they gave people a psychological exam before they got on the ship. And he said no.
Bitch,
and what I see is we have not had an initiatory process like that before of being on another planet. It is going to be a spiritual crisis. And even people who are normally doing well, when knowing as a reality they would be divorced from Earth forever, we don't know how easy we snap. And so we need to have some sort of spiritual basis to interpret our experiences as we leave this planet, or someone's going to pull the freaking airlock.
Oh my God, did you? I, like, was obsessed with Christopher Pike growing up. Do you know who that is?
No.
Christopher Pike was this novelist. Like, that was a pen name. But all of his novels had to do with... like, let's say one novel was actually about these people who got on a spaceship and traveled so far. They traveled light years away from Earth and then came back, but it was so quick that they only aged 10 years, but by the time they got back, the whole Earth was dust. So the whole book was about them coming to this realization, but also the fact that there was this, like, entity there that had, like, grown and kind of taken over after humanity was gone. And so you just saying that, I was kind of like, damn, bitch, I could be the shaman out there. Shit, we just need to make sure we got some shroom spores. Because, you know, I do think that is important, because it's I think grounding your, like, I guess, cosmological perspective in, like, the stars makes it so that you, like, if we do have to leave the planet, shit, we got spiritual people on lock, you know what I mean?
Because we can scale.
I can give tarot readings on Saturn. I would prefer that, you know? Like, that's the planet. So that is so true. And yeah, I think of that also as, yeah, that is a very, like, Octavia Butler kind of thing too, yeah. Especially just because, like, shaman, spiritual people will always be needed, period.
Yeah, I wasn't even thinking of that series. It's funny you say that. My husband has that, like, on the table for me to read.
Right now?
Yeah.
Which series?
Octavia Butler's, the one where the protagonist is, like, a religious revolutionary. I forget the series of books.
I haven't even read that. Damn, I'm, like, channeling your thoughts. I need to quit. Well, you need to read that then. That's what I think Spirit's saying, that you should definitely read it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Because I don't even know the name of any of the, I just have the Dawn book. Mm-hmm. With the, that's the only book I've read of hers, but I know about the philosophy, you know, Afrofuturism mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
I've experimented with constructing languages, like, almost like alien languages with completely different rules that have, like, the purpose of magic built into them, kind of mm-hmm. like you would see in a Middle Egyptian, and experimenting with seeing if I can get that fictional language and all of its correspondences to work magically. Because, like, what if we have to start all over? Like, we should know what you absolutely need to make magic, and what else is the space that you get to create, and mm-hmm. you know.
I mean, I feel like I just need my body to make magic, usually.
Yeah, consciousness. I think empty-handed magic, that is to say, magic that is done without any props, or even, like, intellectual handrails, just, like, a pure experience of total belief and concentration and activation. Like, if you can get to that space, then you really get to use the canvas in a fun way. So yeah. I encourage people to adventure out in ways that are safe and that they feel ready for, to see what they can do that way.
I feel like, to be honest, like, and this isn't me being like, ooh, I'm a fucking... I do call myself a hoodoo mystic, because that's what I am. But I have found, like, even since, like, college, like, the kind of stuff I experience, and you too, it's like, people, I have friends who aren't into this stuff, but the coincidences just kind of line up so much that they're like, they don't even really, like, question kind of, like, me doing what I do, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, like, I feel like a lot of the times, like, I feel like the juju is in me and stuff like that, but I hear about other people having these experiences where they're, you know, like, I think we were talking about this earlier, where they're, like, in between the veil and stuff. Mm-hmm. But a lot of my stuff is, like, external coincidence stuff where it's, like, certain events line up in ways that you can't, like, for instance, being struck by lightning mm-hmm. during a spiritual enlightenment. Like, that's, like, external, like, event stuff that kind of just, I don't know, it's like, it verifies, but also it's just kind of like, I don't know.
That's definitely, like, a folk Catholicism like, staple to, like, my sister prays for the intercession of
Exactly. Yeah, yes.
Saint Teresa Lisieux, which is a French saint, but when you work with her, she has, like, a very cool, approachable, young, loving, but like, gentle female presence. And she died very young. I think it was of tuberculosis. Mm. And when she grants a petition, she shows you flowers. Hmm. So you're just out, like, looking. You're waiting for the flower to come to you.
You're like, where's the damn flower at?
Yeah.
Wow.
So there are a lot of things like that. Like, when, you know, when I lose people in my family, I say their rosary for 9 days back to back. Like, mm-hmm. And I don't do the whole rosary every night. I do the mysteries associated with the day of the week. It's almost planetary, but it's off of different aspects of Jesus' life.
But Jesus is the sun moving through the fucking galaxy, the solar system.
Yeah, so it's kind of
so,
like,
it makes sense.
Like, it's kind of like the whole Osiris when he is in the earthly plane, and then when he's like, when he's kind of in the underworld, so to speak, he, like, there's a different reality. There are sorrowful mysteries, like him getting whipped and all, knowing he's gonna die and all that sort of stuff, and then there are luminous mysteries that are grouped together that are more like the presence of the potency of God moving through him in a very, like, pure, like, guru-like way, you know?
Wow, so, like, this is hella witchy.
So, yeah, and different mysteries, you turn to those for different kinds of petitions. Like, so basically, halfway between the Hail Mary, you're supposed to focus on your intention of what you want for praying, and to kind of frame it materialistically, but from the attitude of you having already gotten it and being grateful for that fact.
Damn, because, that's hella witchery.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like
that's like chaos almost.
Yes,
exactly. Like.
Yeah, and it's like it's a. But at the same time, it is a pure expression of faith, because it's something that maybe even your material mind thinks is ridiculous, or that you don't know the full historical context of, that is so distant from you.
That's the mind.
But you believe in it anyway.
and the universe creates the path to it.
Yeah, I don't think faith is like believing every single article. It's the process of being able to suspend all of your logical thinking and not in a non-foolish point of clear consciousness.
Hallelujah. Thank you, Jesus. We got the gospel in here from the Tyler Cajun from Crossroads and Coincidences at Crossroads and Coincidences on Instagram. That is so deep. But I mean, yeah, a lot of magic is the intention. I mean, part of the reason that Catholicism is like so witchy is because it's like these like very occult, hidden, it's like they've cloaked these occult technological things or occult technology and symbolism, Bible, biblical symbolism.
Yeah, there was like a co-occurring movement of like male solar monotheism happening at the same time. Mm-hmm. And there was also the pre-existing import of really already ancient Egyptian magical concepts. And that there was a like a Library of Alexandria moment where things blended together and became a language all of its own. And Catholicism in particular shares in that flavor of like Zoroastrianism, or because there's an antiquity to it and it's ornate, but it also contains this like cyclical solar concept, because it's not like a lot of charismatic churches. There's a liturgical year, so every day there are certain verses, certain things to meditate on. It gives you a full schedule, and it moves predictably through his life and death in time with the
season. That is astrological.
Yeah, so you can look to that and kind of like look at what the message under the message is, and don't get hung up on agreeing with everyone else who's touched that thing, because you'll never be able to do that.
So I also wanted to talk about, so do you feel like with Catholicism, like, so there's a lot of patriarchal phallic worship in it, but I think there is an empowering way to, I guess, revere the divine masculine. But without, I guess, like minimizing the divine feminine.
And I have no belief whatsoever that divinity can be touched by gender.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
I would have like an emanationist theology where God is a non-dual reality beyond all label or conception, which exists only as a always unmanifest but manifesting potential. And so like around that you have all these like fragments of light that are coming from it but not the exact same, and that the panoply of heaven, the nature spirits, the things that you work with are faces. I guess that would be similar to a lot of a Hindu view of Brahma. And so I am okay with the depiction of God as male, but also see it as a falsehood, like many of the histories of some of the saints, which are blatant falsehoods.
And it's a mechanism, it's a like a like vehicle to like move the energy, like to have a certain concept in mind of the absolute, sort of.
Yeah, and I mean, there are social issues wrapped up in a lot of Catholicism, but you know, ancestor work is definitely part of my practice, but it's a completely different kind of experience because it's very hard to find a lot of ancestor space within recent history that is okay to touch. And Catholicism is a vein in which a lot of my ancestors did the most redeeming things. Like, I work at St. Vincent de Paul, the homeless shelter, for years with my papa, and I saw a really like good, lovable part of him in that, but got him in front of a TV on with the news playing, and it was so bad I couldn't be in the same room.
Oh,
and so
God.
Like In a way, it's not my whole practice, but it's something I keep as a fixture of my practice because it is something to touch that connects me not only to them but to the space. And I find that healthy for me.
So speaking of ancestors, like, I know that you said that there's, like, in recent history, there's some that you don't want to touch, sort of. Like, how do you, I think that's important to think about for, like, a lot of white people and black people, period. Like, I mean, I have a lot of ancestors who, like, did bad stuff, but especially for white people, like, what is your way of, like, how do you feel like you're, like, doing, I guess, reparative work for yourself around that? And, like, you know, or, like, are you able to, like, I guess, do you feel like through healing yourself doing that, like, with your conception of race, that you're, like, helping your ancestors? How do you feel about that?
So, I kind of put myself in a hanged man position for several years doing really clinical psychotherapy for people with the most severe mental illness, like very repeat hospitalizations, high acuity, even outpatient. And I worked primarily with the East Baltimore neighborhood. And I think that was a really transformative part of my life, because I'd volunteered for the homeless before and things, but it was, like, really time limited. You know, you got to go home, right? But it was work that consumed me all the time. And having to see things that your ancestors purposefully looked away from and the remnants of the things that they did. That I'm not saying I'm, like, recovered, but I'm in recovery from a whiplashing consequence of what has happened in our timeline. And I can't be bitter about that, because then that engenders bad spirit on every different angle, right? So I have to come to peace with it, and I view it as one of the challenges of growth given to me in my time, and that I should honor it and try to put some work into it.
Yes. Well, speaking of ancestors and stuff, we need to get onto these hauntings.
Oh, yeah.
So we wanted to talk a little bit about New Orleans, because there's a lot of ghost tours around here. And speaking of the ghost tours, they need to put some fucking masks on, because that shit is annoying. Because we have our coven meetings in the quarter, but it's like I park and I'm walking and there's hella tourists, and I'm like, why are people coming into New Orleans to get tours during a pandemic? I feel like, I don't know, it's like you can go on Google Maps and get on the Google Earth and do a tour. But I don't know, it's just interesting. A lot of them are getting ghost tours because there is a lot of lore around. Well, I mean, it's not just lore, it's like you can feel the energy of it. But there is a lot of, like, history in the French Quarter especially. And we wanted to talk a little bit about some people. So who did you want to talk about first?
So I think we could get the biggest one out the way first and talk about LaLaurie Mansion, which is on Royal Street, on the 1100 block of Royal Street. And it recently got famous a couple years ago because of American Horror Story Coven. And then prior to that, Nick Cage owned it for a short time, but lost it in foreclosure. Around the same time, he built his, like, pyramid crypt here. He's got a crypt in like St. Louis number one, I think it is. He's got a marble pyramid with Cage written on it, and that's just where he's gonna go. I mean, he loves New Orleans, okay. Well, but
is there some deeper meaning to that?
The pyramid, I don't know, probably some national treasure shit, I'm not sure. But in any case, he lived in the house and had a bad time. I don't know.
Really?
But if you go to NOLA.com and search, like, the mansion itself, you will find that in, like, 2018, something like that, they showed pictures of the interior, and it looks like they designed it to piss ghosts off. Because, like, the top floor is, like, a neon crucifix, and all red neon light. It's like a gothic temple kind of vibe.
Oh,
and the upholstery has skulls on it and stuff, and it's disrespectful, I think, because like people were brutally tortured by LaLaurie. She fled New Orleans to France because she became so infamous. And the only reason anyone found out that she was torturing enslaved people was that someone started a fire in the house. So the fire department had to go in, and that's when they found.
And was she Creole? Was she white Creole or what?
I believe she may have been... Yeah, she may have been born in America. I don't know. That's the old definition of Creole. It's like if you were the generation that was born on new land.
Yeah. Because I know she had dual citizenship or something like that, obviously. Yeah. How do you spell that?
LaLaurie.
And so what did she do? How many years was she there doing all that?
She was doing it for an unknown amount of time. The house burnt down in 1983. But she was a very prominent socialite.
Yeah, this says it's New Orleans Creole socialite.
And so it was kind of a shock when it was discovered. And that's part of what made it so famous so quickly. But the place really did burn down. So it was multiple things afterward. It was like a public high school, an apartment building. It was a conservatory. It was like a home for like wayward children, like delinquents. A bar, a furniture store, and then a luxury apartment building. So it's had a lot of lives, which I think only adds to the patina of it.
This says she was 4 years old when the Haitian Revolution started, and that there is a lot of paranoia around resistance and rebellion amongst enslaved black people. So that could, also in the fact that she most likely had like a mental illness, but that could contribute to like the narrative that might have like kind of become exaggerated for her to do this stuff, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, like, I think there is a mental psychopathology out there that is basically, we can just say evil. It can get that bad.
I think it's also like it's kind of a form of, it's like white vigilantism also that is like evil too, because it's like, I don't know, I feel like she probably thought she was keeping order somehow by doing this.
Well, she was experimenting with them.
True.
Yeah.
They weren't human enough to like desert, that they were like you know,
chattel, yeah,
like chattel, yeah, basically.
There's another one that is on Dauphine Street, and it's called the Sultan's Palace, and it was like originally a mansion owned by another family, but it was rented out to this Turkish like aristocrat, and he apparently moved in with like basically a harem, and it was either pirates or it was locals. The history is unclear, but he was apparently
a sex worker.
A harem, like a
concubine,
a coterie of concubines, exactly.
A female servant. Lord Jesus.
And so the locals did not like him and beheaded him and buried his head in the courtyard.
Here?
Yeah, in the Sultan's palace. Now it's called, it maybe a bar? I'm not sure.
Course it would be a bar.
And, I mean, then there's, like, Jackson Square. Like, let's look at the obvious. Like, it was in, 1810s sometime. They executed 100 people. And decapitated them.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
The energy in Jackson Square is weird. I have heard my friend actually say, like, because she's black, and her ancestors literally told her, like, they were like, don't do readings in Jackson Square. But then that's one of the only places that people can do readings. So it's like New Orleans is setting readers up. But it's like people, we don't need to, especially black people, don't need to be trying to do any kind of workings around there because the energy is fucked. Also, whenever I have been looking, I think I sent you a picture one time of me looking across the river from Algiers, and you can see Jackson Square, and it's just like, just, it just looks weird, you know, just the energy of that courtyard is too chaotic, is too much. I don't even like walking through there. That's where the Joan of Arc parade passes through, though, and that's where we usually watch it on my birthday, January 6th. Three Kings Day being I'm special. But that is super interesting, though. So I do think it is something to say, like, people, especially when they come here with this Dionysus energy, it's like they're passing through these energetic force fields where there are spirits who need energy to feed on.
Yeah, I think it creates a friction, like a potent friction.
That's and a magnetism, almost. Because it's like people are so attracted to the quarter, you know?
Yeah, it's really weird. I mean, I've lived in a couple places, but this is the first place I'm living that when you tell people you live there, people act like going there was a spiritual experience. That, like, yeah, it's calling me, which you don't, like, necessarily hear for a lot of cities. And I'm out here to tell people I love New Orleans. I hope that New Orleans loves me, but it will play tricks on people it does not love.
It will tell you. It'll be like, get the fuck out. Yeah, it'll, you just never know. It's a, yeah, it's an interesting city.
Yeah, and I, like, when native people met the French colonists, they were basically like, don't move here. Don't move here. Like,
really?
Yeah, they're like, that's a bad idea.
This Are you serious?
They're like, this place has bad spiritual energy, and it fucking floods. Like,
wow.
They're like, don't do it. And so, like, this has been known.
Well, where were they living?
I it's my understanding that they had more of, like, a nomadic pattern.
they weren't trying to build a city.
Yeah, like, they were familiar with the space and perhaps would defend it under certain circumstances, but they did not choose to live there frequently.
So they literally chose to build the port here and drain the water out, which is what similar to what they did in Mexico City. They drained the water out there. Wow. And yeah, so it is interesting, like, people getting drunk and stuff, because a lot of spiritual people here, especially in ATRs, don't go they don't go to the quarter without their head covered, because there's so much spiritual activity.
And, like, being around people who drink or are drunk a lot in front of you really makes you think, like, okay, what place is alcohol serving in my life, and, like, would my life improve if I were just dry? So although I initially, like, went out and had a cocktail or two, I'm actually, like, not vibing with alcohol. Like, kind of like when you're in an alterative consciousness and a drunk person approaches you, the energy is really difficult to maneuver. It's like, damn. Yeah.
True. Well, yeah, you living in the quarter, so you got to watch your energy for real, too.
I think a good rule of thumb, like, going back to magical hygiene, is never put something into your body that makes you feel worse the day after. Because it's talking to you.
True. As I drink my gin and juice. All everything in moderation. So did you want to do a reading of some sort?
Sure.
So before the reading, we wanted to take a little trip down memory lane. So we're going to do a little reminiscing, and then we'll get to the reading. So stay tuned. But yeah, it was just really different back in freshman year. What was, like, occultism and stuff like that for you? Because there's been such a recent evolution, you know, where everybody got an Instagram doing thorough.
Yeah, like, when I was coming up learning the occult, I had shelved, like, any kind of Catholic attention for a while, and I was doing like Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn stuff. I was spending a lot of time on the internet on, like, occult forums, which now no longer exist, but were full of people with, like, really diverse perspectives. sometimes really inflated egos, but a lot of, a lot of good information and access to PDFs. And I'm over here like trying to learn medieval Latin to, you know, figure out like classic occultism. And that the idea at the time was that all of us as technology lives to learn and experiment. Like we would do things like post sigils for one another, fire them, and like test each other on what the effect was. Like we didn't know what the sigil was going to do, so we all fired it and reported our experiences in like a journal like way, and at the end of the week it was revealed what it was for. And so you got to see things, how they actually played out. It was really cool. So when I left home, I kind of left that mentality for a while, went to Ole Miss, and that's when I started doing like empty-handed things. I went from like the most ornate like Kabbalah kind of thing to like nothing, and it was a process of like integrating all of the different magics of the various period of my life and like make them a whole that doesn't necessarily have like logical cohesion, but as a reality and an experience for me that I find productive. And I'm just rolling with that. You know?
Yes. And now that there's more of a way to network with others who feel similar, you know, because there wasn't, I mean, before you, I would go to Books A Million when I was younger and look in the witch section. And I was always into, like, the elemental magic.
Like Scott Cunningham. And the shapes.
Yeah, like the shapes for the elements and all that kind of stuff. And I also, when I was, like, I guess when I was, like, 8 years old, from like 8 to like 11, I had a stick that I used to conjure the wind. So I'd go out and be like, wind, and like I would just like sit. And then I remember one time I made a sour jar, but it was like I just was a kid one day and I was like, I just want to make like a potion of the worst shit ever. And like I did it, and then like I don't think nobody found it really, and then I like just discarded it because I knew I couldn't do anything with it. But I put some really terrible shit in there.
I think that's just really powerful though.
Like, yeah,
I want everybody to learn. I want everybody to like learn what exists so you can create what can be.
Right? And I think that is part of the reason I was able to grow so much spiritually is because I didn't feel like I had any boundaries, because I was just experimenting, you know. And then my grandma was just there talking about dreams and shit and, you know, being psychic and stuff. And so I think, yeah, there is a certain aspect, like kind of with the chaos magic, like you kind of just have to understand that you have your own media that you can like use to channel different types of energy and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that your spiritual court should be wide, carefully developed and discerned, but it should have a spectrum of experience. Just like you want all of the tarot cards to cumulatively tell the whole life experience.
Yeah, and for me, sometimes mine is complicated because I'm really into Hermeticism and like Hermetic Kabbalah, and like I love my Rider-Waite tarot deck. But they have, like, white images on them and stuff.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm kind of just, like, that is what vibes with me, like, culturally. And then, like, just, like, you know, like, Catholicism and just, like, the whole Christian aspect. Like, because, I mean, I'm Christian adjacent. And so, but also believe in Pleiadians and, like, know, everything else. So, I think it's, like, you have to kind of have to, I think it's important. I like what you were talking about as far as, like, the commonalities between like Black people and Cajun people is like the technology, and it's the technology at the end. You kind of have to figure out how you're gonna work it.
Yeah, I want everyone to respect like other people's cultural space, but I don't want us to become so separate and unknowing of each other that engenders a new process of hatred.
Exactly. And I think, yeah, and I think it's like, I guess I've known you for like 13 years, and I feel like it's cool that we can have this conversation, because I don't think whenever we were talking about like hoodoo stuff, you weren't saying like, this is hoodoo.
Yeah.
Like, you just need to do this spell. You were kind of just like, well, this is what I grew up doing, and, you know, blankety blank blank. And I was like, wow, what? Yeah.
I never had a period where I didn't think magic was possible.
Yeah.
I never, I was lucky enough, despite some, like, early trauma, to never lose that experiential reality that it was possible to do these things.
Mm-hmm. And that is what's important.
And so, like, sometimes the stuff I do still is, like, just a kid playing with a jar and letting that be okay. Like the fool.
Hey, speaking of the fool, we got some cards in front of us right now. We have the Lenormand deck. Is that a French word?
Yeah, so Mademoiselle Lenormand was a French woman. The Petit Lenormand, the one that most people see and the one that's on my Instagram right now, was not actually invented by her. It was invented in Germany, and they used her name as a method of conveying the legitimacy of it. But I also use her system, which later on in my Instagram I'll be teaching people how to do.
And what's your Instagram handle again?
At Crossroads and Coincidences.
And that's spelled out and?
Yes.
Okay.
So the Petit Lenormand is a system of 36 cards. The standard spread uses every card on the deck, but we don't have time to do all that. But the symbols are really straightforward. They're things that, by and large, we still have in common life, or at least know what the symbol means. So it's very easy for people to pick up. And it also differs from tarot in that instead of trying to communicate psychological and metaphysical reality, it is more like a set of symbols designed as almost like an architecture to be able to communicate about a particular aspect of human life. And that is the mundane concerns, anxieties, and intrigues of the common person.
So basically, if you're trying to be messy boots, these are really good. They're not like angel cards where you all like fluffy.
Or like, say for example, I have like the baby or the child, the scythe and the tower. It would suggest, if I'm inquiring about the health of a pregnancy, that the baby will be delivered, but it will be delivered by C-section. And like, I love tarot, but show me where tarot does that. You know, that's a very unique kind of thing to
that make. Would have to come from the channel. It wouldn't have to be able to come from the cards.
It relies on the mediumship or psychic ability of the reader. And I would like people who don't necessarily have like that connection to still be able to make something happen. Like,
so you're making an argument that any divination is accessible to anybody of varying psychic levels, but they have to choose a certain card system or divination system.
You have to know your background, and like, I think Hermeticism is a really great place to start because it gives you like a card catalog of where do you put things that are like Mercury, you know, like you get a list so you can construct rituals and all that sort of stuff. It's really great. But these cards can be read very practically and superficially. Like, sometimes the dog, it's really talking about your dog. Like, if you want to ask about the pet of your health, or the health of your pet, you find out about the dog, and it'll tell you.
So, just for the listeners, they look kind of like traditional playing cards mixed with, like, Rider Waite, more like Renaissance Regal tarot-looking images.
It has like a aristocratic sensibility and bent, which that is really actually the thing that makes some of the cards hard to read. Like, that's the only difficulty. Like, the garden, not really about nature most of the time. It's about society and how it views you. Like, the garden plus the birds plus a letter indicates that, for example, someone may be gossiping about you on social media.
Oh! Messy boo. These are the kinds of cards you do Twitter readings for. Twitter's a messy shit. Bitch. For real though, because I was just telling you, like, I have like a deck of cards. My Barbara Walter deck is like for the current events and the chisme, the gossip. And these cards are very good for just finding out that literal shit, you know what I mean? But also, you know, they're good for inferring about, like, career and stuff like that. Spiritual matters, but they can go through all different levels and stuff, so.
So you want to give it a go?
Yeah, let's do it. So let's concentrate on this fall with, I hate talking about coronavirus, but coronavirus and the quarantine. Yeah. What is some advice that people should do to stay protected and safe? Shuffling the cards, some yeah. ASMR going on.
All right, so for the listeners at home, I'm dealing out 9 cards in a square. The center card is the topic. Like if you were doing a Celtic crossbred, the first card that you dealt out. And if you're offended by the term dealt out, I grew up in a casino town, so that's a force of habit that's never going away.
Dealt out, what does that mean?
Like you deal out blackjack cards. Yeah. It's not as reverent to the card as an instrument. all right, so I will tell you what the cards are from top to bottom first, just okay. like sets of 3. So we have fish, mountain, whip, bear, mice, bird, bouquet, snake, and heart.
And you have these in a 3x3 yeah. square.
And so the center card, the mice, is the card of anxiety, especially the anxiety about like your ability to survive in the world.
Yeah.
And the mice are also the minus card of the Lenormand system. So they take away from the positive cards that are around them. So reading out in like straight down in the middle, we see mountain, mice, snake. So mountain usually stands for obstacles, and it can also stand for the nation that you're in. In this case, I think it's both. The mice indicate a continuing anxiety about the health of the nation in all senses, and the snake suggests that the barrier or the mountain is actually people who are Machiavellian and manipulative, and that people who are self-serving will continue to dominate.
This looks like Mount Rushmore.
Yeah,
in figurative ways.
I've never thought about that. That's interesting. Okay, and so I'll read the past, which is fish, bear, bouquet. And here we have a situation which not that great for us. This is the past. We've only done the past and the
present. I know, but I'm so looking like, bitch!
If they were all roses, like, in past and present, we would have to reshuffle. No, so fish, bear, and bouquet suggest to me that the bear, imagine a corporate man in his 50s to 60s who eats a lot. Like, he orders 2 entrees at the restaurant and his wife eats a salad. And he takes up space. Like, he is the patriarch.
He manspreads.
Yeah. He can be helpful by conferring power on people, and he has that positive aspect, but it's all at, like, Jupiter, and that there's, like, an avariciousness to him that, like, he finds women and comes down and just takes them, right?
And Jeffrey Epstein energy.
And the fish with the bear indicates that the bear is the one catching the fish. It especially works because the animal actually eats fish. And it's like that they are containing the morsels of wealth, because fish stand for really 2 things. Income, wages, like monetary issues, and drunkenness. A bear paired with the fish is also someone who imbibes in substances. So these are people who are not necessarily of the best moral fortitude, because they fall prey to their own vices. And the bouquet means during the past they prospered. So they have helped create the situation that we see in the present. Now in the future, the whip card is a card of suffering. When we're talking about jobs, it's the job that you clock into and out of and try and think about as little as possible, because every time you work, it is a burden. And so we find ourselves in a situation where so much work is required, and followed by the bird. The bird is, it's about communication, but the bird is a gossiper, also mm-hmm. can be quite the flatterer, that we will continue to see a veil of deception. But the heart suggests at the end that, like, not all hope is lost, that mm-hmm. we should, and I kind of take the heart card as the message from the spiritual court in this case, that the task ahead of us is to keep ourselves, like, energetically, emotionally, optimistically healthy, mm-hmm. So that at least we can mitigate that effect, because we will need our strength.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I also see this as being, like, people engaging in more substance abuse.
That's really true. And that goes back to what I was saying before about, like, people every now and then turning their head to the concept of what would a period of just being dry do for me.
Well, there is this this rapper, I think her name was China, but she died from an overdose, and, like, I think that is also a characteristic of, like, Pluto and Scorpio generation, because Pluto's at home in Scorpio, but it's like escapism, you know, especially if there's another quarantine that happens and another surge that happens, which is predicted. Like, when you were talking about imbibing, I definitely saw as people, you know, I mean, people here, you know, it's like people stock up on the alcohol and stuff, but especially people who have issues with other types of drugs and stuff, like, that can become very serious with mm-hmm. the isolation. So that kind of made me think about that when you were talking about the those other cards. I need to get me a Lenormand deck. Shit, these are some cool cards.
And so I'm going to put four cards on top of
here we go now.
The cards. Okay.
Oh, God. Oh, that looked like I'm sending you a four-page letter.
So, no, this is a set of four that talks about the overall, like, sensational trend. And it is foretelling a period of uncertainty about income, but because of information that is not delivered to us, that we are, like, going to be uncertain about what will be provided for us to get through this crisis, and that anxiety is the mice in the center of the original spread. That income anxiety is very real, mm-hmm. and that people need to take the challenge of maintaining wellness throughout that as seriously as they can.
Harvest your food from the summer,
and
it's not too late to grow some vegetables.
The card at the very top, which so the cards have kind of formed a pyramid now, is the card that is pressing down, like, the larger cyclical.
The issue. Eight, Lion's Gate.
So it's the eight, and it's also the coffin. And so,
oh, shit.
You know, when you read tarot and you flip the card over and it's death, people have that moment, right?
Yeah.
And you get to say, oh, well, you know, the death is a transformation and the next thing is coming along. Well, Lenormand, don't play like that.
Oh, shit. We're getting dragged.
Death is what it is. And that sometimes you need to be audacious enough in your reading to see death when it comes. And in this situation, the coffin is the coffin. And it means that we will continue to see numbers while this is not attended to.
While people are getting false information.
And I'm not over here, like, wanting to read people to tell them the worst news possible. Like, I'm not going to drag you for filth, like, through reading. That's not the kind of process I'm interested in. Mm-hmm. But sometimes the reality is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes. Well, thank you, Ashe, for that reading. Thank you. You know, I love a good drag. I'm a Saturn bitch. But yeah, I mean, you know, we are basically conspiracy theorists over here in the MSF fam. So y'all know, coming with the real view, you know what I mean? Yeah. Period. I see you have some other decks over there. What's some other ones over there?
So I have the Crowley deck, and I also have the Grand Jeu Lenormand, the one that is more closely based on what she read with.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to maybe do a reading for the collective, like, yeah, spiritually?
Yeah, let's see.
Because I feel like there's a spiritual ascension moment going on. Maybe, like, for the rest of Mars and Aries, like, what's the energy looking like, you know? Seeing you flip the cards just made me want to pull mine out. Ah! I love my cards. Does that say rot?
Yeah. So the cards have quite a little setup. There's a Latin letter in the corner, and sometimes underneath that has the geomantic figure. At the center top, you have a constellation. Then the playing card insert on the other side. And then in the middle, you have this big central scene, and it could be from the Trojan War, Jason and the Argonauts. It could be from the Zodiac, or it could be what are called the unforeseen cards, which are just more like hazard events. And so here really I'm seeing we're going to go on a process of continuing to have to steer our resources really carefully, and that we are going to go through a process of waiting. It also has a card of theft. That, like, basically Zeus is stealing away with a girl. And so it indicates, again, like I did the reading with Patigio on my Instagram, that there's some sort of deception or their handoff that's happening that is unknown to the public that will not surprise us for what it is, but we do not know about it yet. It's coming. And it indicates us waiting patiently. Going into the past, it indicates that we've had a fundamental problem with the wrong people getting accolades, and that something was slipped into our system with us unaware. It is literally the Trojan horse going through the gates. And so that could be talking about the coronavirus, or it could be talking about, like, you know, intelligentsia from other countries.
Feel like this is the news too.
Yeah.
Because, you know, intelligentsia is driven by other countries sometimes. Russia, for instance, I just read this news article. We got to do co-readings. We need to get on IG Live and do, like, co-readings.
Yeah.
But on IG Live, they are talking about how, like, Iran and China have vested interest in Biden winning, and Russia has vested interest in Trump winning again. And they have been putting, like, basically information out there to drive people's attention so that it's, like, diverted while all this other shit is going on. So it's, like, I do feel like there is a lot of Trojan horse stuff. Also, I didn't bring this up, but, like, there's a new WAP video, Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion. And I feel like there's a lot of symbolism in that, too. But there's been a lot of weird celebrity news happening to where it's kind of, like, so, it's weird. There's a lot of water spirit stuff happening, but a lot of stuff where it's, like, driving people's attention, but it makes me wonder what's happening in the background. I'm like,
Yeah, like there's that old saying, magic flows where attention goes. Don't be doing work for other people.
It's just weird. I don't know. Wow. Well, I think that tells people that we need to be doing more astral travel and going inward, because this is all a matrix in the end, and everything becomes a more complicated articulation of the formula.
Absolutely.
To keep us hypnotized. Well, did you have anything else that you wanted to talk about?
No, I think we covered a lot of ground. Thank you for having me on. It's been a very pleasant experience, and it's great to do it with such a close friend.
Yes! Well, give us your information. Give us your, like, Cash App, too, or whatever, you know, your Venmo, or whatever.
So you can... You can schedule through crossroadsandcoincidences.com, and my handle is at crossroadsandcoincidences on Instagram. And, you know, if you have any questions before about booking a reading, feel free to DM me and we can talk a little bit about it.
Yes, well, thank you so much for coming on, Coven Sister. Well, y'all have a great night. Thank you so much. Bye. Yes, thank you so much for listening to today's show. As I mentioned, if you are interested in giving any donations, you can send anything. Anything helps. My PayPal is keondillon@gmail.com. That's KeonDillon@gmail.com. Venmo is at KeonDillon. And my Cash App is $ELDRA. And so I'm sending you so many blessings. I'm speaking blessings over your name, over your existence, over your life. Sobre tu vida. I love y'all. Thank you so much for tuning in. See y'all on the interwebs. Bye-bye.